Welcome to the GOGcast, brought to you by Mad Cats, all about the game, an expert broadcaster, simple yet powerful, live streaming and recording. And now, your host, Leah.
Hello and welcome to another GOGcast. My name is Leah. I'm going to be your host for this evening. This is episode number 78, and we decided to try something new. We're actually not doing this on Twitch. We're all in the same room, except for Allie, who is on remote. And we've got a producer doing all the magic behind the scenes. So we want to ask you guys what you think of this kind of episode. It's something that we're testing out, trying to, you know, have a conversation in real life. So I'm going to let y'all know who's on the cast here today. To my right is Simon.
Hello.
Hi. Further right from him is Catherine. How you doing?
I'm good.
We've got Allie on the FaceTime.
Hi.
And special thank you to Michael for being our technical producer. He actually used this setup to do his sneaker podcast, which y'all should go check out. Yeah.
I'm just happy that I can actually participate now. I'm not producing or anything.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, you're just chilling.
It's awesome.
It's sweet.
I like it.
Yeah, so if you're interested in sneakers at all, go check out the Sneaker Podcast on iTunes and all that jazz. You're on the Sneaker Pod and stuff too, right?
Even if you're not interested, go here, check it out.
Yeah, go check it out. Give them the hit. Yeah, all the love for the Nike and the Adidas. But we're here to talk about video games, right?
Yes, that's indeed the point.
Yeah, exactly. So, before we get into all them hot news, let's talk about what everybody's playing right now. Simon, you're next to me. You get to start.
Oh, I get to start. I never get to start.
You it's get awesome. To start
Holy
today.
Crap, I feel so important. Geez, still Overwatch. I mean, it's I'm addicted to that game, like it or not. So some Overwatch, some Pokemon Go, some what else? It's pretty much it actually for
No
now.
Man's Sky.
Oh yeah, it's true. I did
review.
Play that game. Yes,
you
I think we're gonna talk about it, right?
Yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit.
It was so underwhelming that I forgot that I played that game.
That's a thing now. Oh my god! But the best line was actually used by Catherine in the Facebook post that you think the dude should have been kicked in the baby
a
maker.
A swift kick in the baby maker,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't say dude. I just said the person who made that decision should be rewarded with a swift kick in the baby maker. That's all I said.
That's what happens when you make a crappy game.
Well, it's not. We'll talk about it.
Okay. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Catherine.
Hi.
What games you be gaming?
Well, now that I fixed Witcher, I'm back at playing Witcher. Hey, pro tip, people, if you play very 3D heavy game, remember to regularly update your GPU drivers.
Oh, yeah?
I was like five versions behind. And,
and then it just went kaput?
And the game wouldn't launch anymore after a Windows update.
Wouldn't launch?
Wow.
Yeah, it wouldn't even launch. So I was like, oh, right. I just had the like little NVIDIA icon with the...
I'm sorry, what? NVIDIA?
NVIDIA. Whatever.
Sure.
I've never said that word out loud until today.
You got some of those NVIDIA?
NVIDIA's? I'd like to buy an NVIDIA.
NVIDIA. Anyway,
start that company.
I updated my GPU and it actually offered, would you like for us to optimize for The Witcher for
yes.
you? And I was like, yes. And now the game runs even better and
there
it's even
go.
Prettier and I can count the facial hair on Geralt's face. It's perfect.
Well, often what they do with like updates is that they release an update specific for a game. So maybe you didn't have The Witcher specific update.
Yeah.
Oh. Maybe that's why you were having issues. Because I know that often that's what they do.
Did you buy it at launch?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but it was really because I updated Windows and then the C++ visual thing wasn't working for The Witcher anymore, even though I had done all the steps to fix it. Then I just updated the GPU drivers and it worked perfectly. So I'm back on that after an evening of cursing and being a terrible, terrible gamer. I should have known this. Other than that, I've started playing Grow Home, which is
Ooh.
The sequel to...
Grow Up.
I'm playing Grow Up, which is the sequel to Grow Home.
Yes.
The names are also close.
Yes.
But it's like the game is very similar so far. I've only played a couple of hours, but the gameplay is very similar. They've changed the
robot just looks a little bit taller.
It does.
He did grow up.
Yeah. I know. And I'm sure they did it on purpose. And in the first one, you have Mom, which is an acronym for whatever your ship is.
Okay.
And she sends you on a planet to grow a plant. And when you grow it up all the way back to her, and then you grab a star seed and you put it in the ship and then you go. In this one, at the beginning of the game, you hit an asteroid field. And because of that, Mom gets blown to pieces. So now you actually have to build your spaceship back. So you're actually collecting pieces. So I'm guessing that's why they call it Grow Up, because you have to actually do this without the help of your mom.
That got really dark really quickly.
I know, but it's actually still a very fun and bubbly game. So you just have to put her back together. And I'm guessing like the first one was about 10 hours of gameplay. I'm thinking this one's going to be about the same time. And I'm guessing the lesson will be like, you grew up, you did all of this without your mom, and now your mom is back and you can go on another adventure.
Well, what's the first in the series called?
Grow Home.
And then this one, Grow Up. And so I think the third one's going to be called Grown Up. Oh. And then you're just going to sit in a dark room contemplating terrible life.
You're going to be sitting in a dark room filling out papers and...
The robot's going to have a drinking problem. And Mom is going to be in the home.
Oh my God, it's got dreary.
Wow, Allie, holy crap. You said a game got dark, you just made it darker. Jeez.
It's just the natural progression of things, guys. Come on.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to go and drink myself into a stupor.
and just reflect on life.
It's a commentary, guys. It's deep.
It's deep. It's dark.
It's very deep and dark.
All right, Allie, what have you been playing? Because I know I asked Nintendo to ship something to your office.
Oh, yes. But I haven't actually started playing that. Just okay. Because I got there at the end of the day on Friday. But it's ready for my morning commute and my afternoon commute.
What is it?
It is called... And I don't want to even say it.
Why?
You'll just have to wait till the review.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Is it because you're ashamed or because you don't want to say it?
Is it because it's an overtly girly game?
It's just, it's not something that people have normally seen me play or review.
So it's not a JRPG or...
It's not like an FPS. Okay. So they'll just have to wait and see. But it's one of my guilty pleasure genres.
Interesting.
So, but... What I have been playing a lot of recently is, it's called Happy Dungeons, and it's on Xbox One's Game Preview. It's free to download, free to play, and it's the sequel to Happy Wars.
How are Dungeons and Wars happy?
Well, that's the thing. Like, the art style is very cartoony.
Okay.
And, like, there's a lot of jokes in the game, like, written into the game, as well as, like, the design. So it's very jolly once you get past the war and dungeons part.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's a great co-op game, and it's free to play. And if anybody else is playing that's listening, you should definitely add me and join me in my adventures, because it's a lot of fun.
And Allie, how can people team up with you? What's your handle?
You can add me on Xbox as 8BitBlonde, all spelt out. And if you see me playing, just send me a party invite and we can start bashing orcs together.
Sweet. That'll be good times. Me, I've been playing Diablo 3 again.
Nice.
I went and bought it on PC.
Good job.
Everybody was like, come play with us. And I'm like, I got it on Xbox. And they're like, but PC. And I'm like, okay. And it was cheap. It was like $20. So not a big deal. And I realize how much of that game I, like, don't know about. Like, everybody's like, are you doing the seasons? Have you done this? Have you done that? I'm like, I barely made it through, or I haven't made it through the story mode yet. Like, I bought it so that I could play with people, but I know nothing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun.
A lot has changed since, like, even since Reaper of Souls came out, I'm now with the seasons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how they're delivering content through seasons. And I think it's a smart way of delivering content and how they're doing it. So
yeah, totally. And I'm hoping, that by doing this, and with BlizzCon coming up in the end of fall, mm-hmm. that there'll be new expansion pack of some sort. I don't think it's going to be Diablo 4. I think they have too much other stuff going on right yeah. now. But another expansion would be good, and then I'd be ready.
It would be strange to release Diablo 4, because I feel like they haven't fully attained probably what they wanted to attain with Diablo. So
I feel like there's not going to be another full-blown content update for Diablo 3.
No?
No. I feel like we're going to probably be another 2 years, and then we'll see Diablo 4. But I don't think we're going to get more, like, a full, like, Reaper of Souls-size update.
They need to do something to keep people at it, though. I mean, is this season's enough?
I think it is for some people, but I think Blizzard made a lot of mistakes with Diablo 3.
That's true.
It's another statement.
I think at this point, if they keep their current player base happy with, you know, seasons and you know, a few updates here and there, they're better off just waiting until they're able to launch into full game development for Diablo 4.
Mm.
Yeah, they and I don't think it's going to be right now because they're too into Overwatch.
Well, it's different teams. It's not the same team.
Yeah. Still, though, you don't want to be marketing two things at the exact same time.
They've
Blizzard
done it
does
before.
That regularly. They've done it with Hearthstone. They did it with Heroes of the Storm.
True.
They're very capable of doing that, but I just think that right now they have a lot on their plate, and I think Diablo will continue.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of funny. I started playing it again on Xbox One.
Nice.
Just because I realized I bought it on PC, I bought it on Mac, I beat it on both those, and then I bought it on Xbox 360, and I beat it on that, and then I bought it on Xbox One and never played it. So I still had this brand new game, and I had no achievements unlocked for it, so I decided to pick it up again this weekend, and I realized how boring it is to play solo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I was playing by myself and on Twitch, and one of the people jumped in that stumbled across the channel, Crazy Cat, who was really awesome. And yeah, it's definitely a game you want to play with friends. But that's why I had bought it.
Especially if you're playing Seasons, like, well, that's the appeal right now to go back to it, is playing Seasons. And playing Seasons alone is, especially when you're starting off.
It's a grind.
When you're starting off, alone is annoying. Like, you almost want someone to come and power level you before you can actually start enjoying the game.
That's what was happening yesterday.
Yeah, it's a bit like other MMOs. Like, the game starts, quote unquote, at max level.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much what it is with Diablo of the Seasons. Like, it's the actual game is to get as far as you can into greater rifts and stuff, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you can't do those until you're max level. So if you're playing by yourself, getting to max level takes a while. And it's like you're missing out of a lot of the season stuff when you're not max level.
It was mind numbing.
Yeah. Leveling in Diablo is horrible.
Yeah, I wanted to beat my head against the wall. I was like, oh my god, okay, just do this one last thing so you can get this achievement and you can go play Happy Wars. That's like what I just kept...
Yeah, the thing is, too, you can't do certain stuff until you beat the game on story mode in order to get the higher difficulty levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're forced to do that.
Well, I mean, like, see how I did it for season... five, I think I came back for season five and played with some friends, is that they power level you so that you know they do like a greater rift at Torment 3 or whatever, so you pretty much get to 70 in like two rifts.
It's quick,
so it takes, you know, not even an hour, and then you follow them and you go beat Malfeil on your game, and then you're done. So you can start doing all the rifts and adventure mode and that kind of stuff. So the fact that Blizzard has not put a stop to that makes me think that that's what they want you to do.
Like, okay.
They want you to bring a friend and power level you to level 70 and then do it. I think that's probably what they want to do.
Bring a friend.
Bring a friend.
Oh, it's so nice. To the devil world. War zone.
Like people that don't have friends.
Yeah, it's true.
Those don't poor have people. Friend, well, that's where I guess people stumble across others on Twitch and make friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, we're going to wrap it up there for this segment and take a little break, and we'll come back with some hot news. Sound cool?
Hot, hot, hot.
Love it. And we're back with Catherine, Allie, and Simon in the GOG cast. We're about to jump into some hot news, and first on the plate... from Polygon, Dead Rising 4 spreads 4 pre-order bonuses across 4 retailers. Wah, wah. So, It's time to talk about pre-orders and how I think this is completely unfair because, geez, you don't even have the chance to get everything in one place ever. So, guys, I personally think that pre-ordering sucks. I think you should wait for places like us and Polygon and IGN give the 2 cents before you go and put your money down on a game, because God only knows what you're going to get. I want your 2 cents on it.
I've always said, do not pre-order a game. Like, you should never pre-order a game unless, you know, you're absolutely positive and you've read reviews and all that stuff, so you know that it's, you know, it's not just the hype, it's actually going to come out, so it's going to be interesting. So don't pre-order a game. Now, when it comes to pre-order bonuses, I don't know who publishes Dead Rising 4, but they are, yes, very much shooting themselves in the foot, because look at what happened with Deus Ex Mankind Divided. Like, they had a big pre-order fiasco where, like, if you pre-order and then if enough people pre-order, then more, you get more content in the game, and which was like, so if we don't pre-order enough, you're gonna block out content from the game because we don't give you enough money. Like, that's crazy, and it 100% backfired on that. I'm sure that they lost sales because of it. So I have a feeling that the people that were publishing Dead Rising 4 are doing the same thing. It was clear that people don't buy into that bull crap anymore, that they're not interested in doing all those pre-order things. So.
Yeah, let's talk about what you get by paying for Dead Rising 4 in different spots. Those who make the pre-order purchase through GameStop will receive a snowball shooting helmet and the Steampunk Snowmed Head DLC. Those who decide to buy it directly from the Microsoft Store will receive the X-Fist DLC. It essentially looks like you have green Hulk hands, but it's not Hulk hands. They're like gloves. The next thing is going with the Christmas theme, because Dead Rising 4 takes place at Christmas. Best Buy pre-orders will get them across the special weapon and the Candy Cane Crossbow DLC. And then the last bit is if you buy it on Amazon, you get the Slice Cycle, which is essentially a motorcycle with 2 chainsaws on the side. I mean, all of these are super cute, if you like that kind of thing. I mean, the Candy Cane Crossbow is kind of amazing. I don't know what you guys think. Yeah. It's kind of hilarious. Still, like, I don't like the idea that I have to choose.
No, it's... I mean... Yes, it's mostly cosmetic stuff, and it's not like anything that's game changing or anything, but it's still like so freaking annoying that you have to deal with that kind of stuff when trying to purchase the game. Like, do they say if you'll be able to get those items anywhere else than if you pre-order, or?
Yeah, because the thing, like, Blizzard used to do a lot of exclusive things that you could get at BlizzCon and things like that, but there's an in-game economy that made it possible for you to trade them and buy them. So they essentially use that stuff to stimulate their in-game economy.
Well, not only that, but it's like stuff you get at BlizzCon is cosmetic pets and stuff that...
Yeah, it doesn't really add to the game other than bragging rights. Cool. Yeah,
exactly. It's 100% bragging rights. And you don't have to buy a game to get those. You just get them by going to BlizzCon. You know, well, of course you have to buy your BlizzCon ticket, but
which is expensive AF.
But the point is that even if you have the game and you don't get those items, who cares? And so I'm sure some people don't even have the game and will get those items, be like, oh cool, you know, and they can, I don't know,
well,
trade them to friends.
They made
or whatever.
It sound like in the article that the only way to get these was through the particular vendor, and that they actually wrapped up the price of what all this would cost you if you wanted to get everything. $239.96 American. And once again, Polygon says you should not pre-order games.
Never pre-order games.
Allie, thoughts?
Okay.
Get prepared for some 8-bit blonde rage.
Not rage, mostly sadness at this point. I'm really sick and tired of publishers holding fans hostage.
Yeah.
And it really bothers me. And this, like, I'm not totally anti-pre-ordering. I pre-order a lot of games. And when I read about the Dead Rising thing, it kind of just, like, gave me PTSD-style flashbacks to Destiny and what's going on with Destiny at this point, which it's not retailer exclusives, but we're dealing with console exclusives for Destiny. And they've taken it one step further, where it's not just cosmetic gear, but it's an entire quest line. as well as PvP Crucible map that's going to be accessible to PS4 users before Xbox users. For an entire year, the PlayStation community is going to have it before the Xbox community does. And I'm really tired of it. I am paying the same price for a game as these PlayStation users, and they are getting more content than I am getting. So on top of the quest line and the PvP map, they're also getting two more sets of gear for each class, a ship and a sparrow. So that's a considerable chunk of in-game content.
And is that when you buy a DLC, or is it just that, or an expansion, or is it just free content that's coming out?
It's for the Rise of Iron expansion that will be coming out later this year. I don't know. I think the whole concept of putting content behind a retailer or console gate is really damaging to the community as a whole. I think it creates unnecessary tension and unnecessary displeasure. And I think it's really wrong of them to charge people the same price, but not give them the same content.
Like we've always said, vote with your wallet. Just, you know, I think that's what's going to happen with Dead Rising 4, that people are just not going to buy the game, because you'd be like, why would I buy the game if I don't have a full game? And I think that you would have to do the same thing with Destiny. Just don't buy the game.
Which, you know, is a really nice thing to think and to want to do. But the thing is, I'm a fan that has sunk in hundreds of hours into this game only to be essentially backhanded.
Yeah, move to the side.
You know what I mean? Like, I would love to be able to be like, well, no, I'm not going to play this expansion with my friends, and none of us are going to buy it, and we're just going to wave bye to Destiny. But, like, it's detrimental to us after all the time that we've put in raiding and grinding and getting our light levels maxed out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in our group doc, essentially, I said, this means everybody is a loser. Do you know what I mean?
It does. This means that everybody loses out. And, like, obviously this is a business decision made at a business level. And there's obviously money behind these types of decisions. But it does affect the community in the long run, and I think it's something that needs to be examined, and I think it's something that needs to be done away with completely. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we're going to see that, but that's my wish as, like, a gaming community member, that it would just go away.
Yeah, but I mean, if you go back to the Deus Ex example, if we don't tell the people in charge that we don't agree with that, then it'll continue going. And I'm sure that there's an outcry in the Destiny community, well, the Xbox Destiny community, and I'm sure that the forums are full of people yelling at Bungie for what they're doing. But, you know, it all comes down to people are still going to buy it, so people are going to keep doing it. Publishers are going to keep doing that, like it or not, because, like, they were annoyed, but they still bought millions of copies. So whatever.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's a terrible cycle
because
they've brought in these fans. And these fans have, first of all, they've invested money because, you know, this is the third expansion for Destiny. Yeah, third, and. So people have already invested the money in this game, and now they're just being, you know.
Isn't Bungie a Microsoft? Used to be a Microsoft studio?
They made Halo. Yeah.
They made Halo.
I know, but aren't they like a Microsoft?
I don't think they were ever a first-party studio.
Is it P43 that's owned by?
They weren't a first-party studio, but the thing is, I believe, an Activision decision.
Oh, definitely.
It was an Activision decision. They partnered up with PlayStation when they brought out Destiny. Their lead console. Because the way that it works is by doing that, PlayStation puts the bill for the marketing campaign.
Mm.
Right? So everything, that's why all the Destiny campaign had the end only on PlayStation with the music and all that.
This is like all speculation, but that is usually how it works. but it's just, I don't know, it's just extremely frustrating.
Do you think that Dead Rising has a big enough community behind it to be able to push against this like Deus Ex did?
No.
Probably not.
To me, Dead Rising is like a game you pick up because you're like, oh, I want 30 hours of smacking zombies in the face with like...
a chainsaw?
A giant penis.
Yeah.
Like
candy cane crossbow, yeah.
It's like, It's like your winter beater game. It's the second game you have when you just want to like blow off steam, but it's your side chick game.
It is.
Note, the cat has side chicks.
Oh, I have side chick games.
Okay. That is the perfect way to describe it, Kat. Like, it has like a subreddit, but no one uses a subreddit until there's like news about a new game.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have a community. It has fans, but
it hibernates.
Yeah, I don't think it's the same as like World of Warcraft, like when Blizzard makes a decision, or Destiny when Bungie makes a decision, or Halo when 343 makes a decision. I don't think it's like that.
So. No, it definitely doesn't have a bigger following as all those games. So yeah, I mean, people are going to be pissed, but in 2 weeks, no one's going to think about it anymore because it's not a big name.
The Deus Ex thing kind of stood out because like they kind of tried to do their own like in-house Kickstarter by holding their fans.
Yeah, exactly.
It was horrible.
It was just in terrible taste.
It was weird.
It's funny because I was actually the devs made a AMA on Reddit, and one of the questions was like, "What's your how do you see this, and why do you think it was, you know, there was such a huge community outcry?" And like the devs like, "Well, unfortunately, this is something that we can't control. This is 100% up to the publisher," which is true because like often, more often than not, the devs are like, "Well, we made the game, and then the publisher decides how they want to market it and publish it." So. It's so hard to be tough with those guys, and actually, like I was saying earlier, not buy the game, because like it or not, in the end, you're also hurting the dev, who probably has little to no idea on what's going on.
As someone who works in the industry, that's one thing I wish people understood more, is that there is developers and there are publishers.
Yeah, they're very different.
They are very rarely one and the same, and they are very rarely completely aligned in the community's interests. And so it's very hard in situations like this, because everyone gets mad at the developer because that's the name you see, right? That's the name you see when you boot up the game. But in the end, the majority of the time, they don't have final say on these types of decisions.
Speaking of decisions, it's time to talk about CSGO. Oh my CSGO.
Yeah.
There's way too much shit that happened this past few weeks. So, Simon,
what do you want to start with?
Let's talk about the changes to competitive CSGO, because I think this is interesting in that
There's
two sides to the coin. There's many different people affected on different levels, and there's also communication that wasn't clear. So, Simon, roll it out.
Well, for those who don't necessarily follow the Counter-Strike professional scene, is that for, I want to say, at least 6 months to a year right now, teams have been starting to using coaches in-game. So normally you have your five, usually how it used to work is that you have your five players in-game. Each player kind of has a role, but there's always one role that's almost always the same, is that there's an in-game leader, which is the guy in charge of calling out the strategies, saying who goes where, saying who does what. And that's basically like a role in one of those five persons. But what teams have been starting to do is that they've been starting hiring a coach, which is someone who's not in the game, who's 100% on the sidelines and talks with the players and basically takes on the role of in-game leader without actually playing. So he's the one who keeps track of the economy. He's the one who keeps track of the other teams, the strategies and counter strategies, that kind of stuff. So player can focus on actually playing the game. And
so like many other sports.
Like most sports, you have a coach on the sidelines calling out the strategies and pretty much telling you what to do. What happened is that I think it's ESL. ESL sent out a memo to all the teams participating in Pro League saying, for the LAN finals, you will not be able to use a coach. So coaches will be able to talk to you before the game, if there's a break in the game, and in the half game. So basically, like a couple minutes of coach interaction during the game, which at first was a huge outcry in the community and other pro players that were like, well, this comes out of nowhere. We didn't know about it. Like, you're destroying teams and destroying people's, because a lot of people, like, I'm talking about Ninjas in Pajamas, who brought in Threat, who's an old CS player, and that's all he does. He doesn't play. The only thing he does is coach. And by doing that, they almost quote unquote nullified his position team, because now he can't interact at all with the guys when they're playing. So there was a huge outcry in the community, and the fact that Valve didn't even announce, well, at first it was said that it even announced it themselves, that it was literally ESL contacting the team saying, by the way, this is happening.
Yeah, see, that's where the confusion started, because it was all sneaky in that all of a sudden ESL was just like, yo, you can't have coaches. Well, and then nobody really, it wasn't clear that the decision was coming from Valve.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the email said that to retain a Valve major and to be considered in good standing with Valve to receive a major, that Valve's like, these are the things you need to do, and one of them was coaches. So ESL made a decision to be like, no, we're gonna follow with Valve and say that it's not. And of course there was a big outcry in the community, and yes, it made sense that there was a big outcry because it was really one out of nowhere, and two, it seemed very unnecessary, because it's having a coach, every team had a coach now. Like, I would agree that if only one team had a coach and that kind of stuff, that yes, at first that's how it was, so it was a bit unfair, but now every pro team, almost 90% of pro teams have a coach now, which is with them. Like, they even have their own computer set up next to the guys, and they, like, they're in the game with them, which, you know, sucks. And then the day after, Valve was like, whoa, time out. Here's a memo we sent a year ago to all the professional organizations saying you're not allowed to use a coach. Coaches are considered to be a sixth player, and Counter-Strike is 5v5. You're not supposed to be using a coach. And so that was a year ago.
Well, why didn't Valve put that public?
I mean, there's probably a lot of communications between Valve and pro teams that we don't know about.
Yeah, I imagine. But something so fundamental in changing the strategy of how a game plays out, like a coach, well, it seems like something that should have been like public.
A year ago, coaches were not common. Like, almost no team had a coach. So I think it's probably when they first saw it happening, they're like, no, you can't do that. But then organizations decided, well, we're just going to do it again and go for it. So there was probably like an error on Valve's part by saying it a year ago, then not talking about it for another year, because that's what the pro teams have been saying now. Like, yes, they told us once, but then like we started integrating coach and whatnot, and no one said anything to us. So that's kind of like, okay, well, I guess if they're not talking about it, then it's fine. Which has always been a problem with Valve, is they don't communicate with the community or the organizations.
Yeah, and not talking to the players. I know, Allie, you do a lot of snooping on the Twitters and all that jazz. yeah, she's like our Twitter queen. A lot of the players, like, straight up, like, table flipped that day. Like, Stephanie Harvey was going, like, she was ticked.
Yeah, there's a lot of anger on Twitter. There was a lot of passive aggressive tweets, which, I mean, understandably. And I just think that this is part of a greater issue that not just Valve and not just CSGO has to deal with, is just esports in general. There seems to be a lack of communication between developers and organizers and players and community. Like, there is no transparency. There's no, like, black or white. It seems to be, like, all really murky gray area.
There's often a lot of decisions that are made that you're like, why would you change it? Because, and like, oh, because it's for the greater good. But how is it for the greater good? And they just don't tell us, you know?
That's it. Like, a lot of these decisions seemingly come out of nowhere because there's no prior communication. Exactly. And because it's just kind of laid on the table as, like, this is law, and it's going to affect how these teams play, and it's going to affect how you guys view things, but this is how it is, and that's just it. You know, because no communication.
Yeah. Kat, you and I are fairly new to the whole esports thing. It's something that you and I jumped into recently. Being new to the scene and hearing, you know, changes like this and not really understanding, is it off-putting for you to want to get into competitive CSGO and get interested in it?
I don't find it off-putting, but it does confuse me, and it just puts me in a position where I'm like, are the competition going to keep going? Should I keep watching? Should I keep getting into it? Because I've only been watching CSGO for about six or 8 months or so, and on a more regular basis other than the one yearly big competition. So For me, I had to read up on it to understand why it's such a big issue. Mm-hmm. I can see the lack of communication being a big problem. At the same time, like, if they have CSGO with a coach or CSGO without a coach, as a noob, I'm not going to see the difference.
No, for sure. For people just watching the game, you really will not see the difference. But it's really like at a pro level, and when you're really like absolutely like obsessed with it, like I am at sometimes, that it really does make a difference, and that you will start seeing issues with that. And actually, it's another little news thing that I maybe wanna. It's not on the list, but
okay, go for it. Not on the list. I like it. Not on the list.
It is very relevant to what we're talking about. Blizzard also started sending cease and desist letters to gambling websites.
Oh yeah, Blizzard, Valve. Oh,
Jesus, Valve. Yes,
you got Blizzard on the brain.
Too much Overwatch
for you, sir.
No, yeah, they've been starting to send cease and desist letters to a lot of websites because of the whole Phantom Lord Pro Syndicate stuff that I'm sure everyone's just tired of hearing about.
Yeah,
the problem about that is that CS:GO betting per se was, yes, it was a problem. And yes, it wasn't properly
regulated.
That's the word. I won't say presented, but yeah, regulated. So that was definitely a problem. But if it wasn't for websites like CS:GO Lounge, CS:GO Lounge was pretty much the first and the most popular website, and it shut down trade betting last week. And already we are definitely seeing a big dip in smaller tournament viewership, because anytime there was a game on HL TV, the game was on CS:GO Lounge. Even if it was two unknown-ish teams, pro-am teams, there was still like 20,000, 25,000 people watching it because they bet on the game. And now I feel that a lot of the viewership is going to go down a whole lot more because of the issue of there's not going to be betting anymore, which is really, again, a double-edged sword, because you want to regulate betting, you want to regulate how it is, because skins do have a monetary value, but at the same time, you're reducing quote-unquote access to pro-am games or smaller scale games. That, and I'm sure that next big tournament, we will see a big difference. Like, the majors have just been growing for the last year. I'm sure that it's either going to stabilize or it's going to go down for the next major. I'm 100% sure that it's going to make a big impact on the viewership of the people.
But isn't the betting what's fueling like that team that was throwing games?
Well, throwing happened a couple times. Like, there was that big thing with iBuyPower that happened 2 years. Actually, today, exactly 2 years ago, is when it happened. Yeah, it's funny.
Wow.
Is when it happened. And yeah, that was, that's what, I guess, opened up a lot of people's eyes to betting, and that there's a possibility of match fixing. But like, a lot of teams, lower tier teams, have been doing it, but they get caught. Like, so far everyone got caught.
It's funny because now we've got companies like Lotto Quebec here who are jumping into it. Like, Mise au Jour is now part of it. Allie.
Yeah, so like, where things are getting a little bit unclear and murky is the fact that there's been no like official statement one way or the other about like various things, whether it's like betting on matches or betting on skins, like the gambling sites. There needs to be a yes or no answer at this point.
They've said that skin betting should not happen. That was clearly said, that skin betting, they're against it, and that's why they're shutting down skin betting websites.
Are they turning off the API?
But the thing is, are they not happy with skin betting happening on third-party sites, and they are okay with it happening through quote-unquote, you know, legal channels?
There's no legal channels for skin betting.
Okay. Is it Valve sanctioned?
No.
That's what I mean. That going to be their next step?
Maybe that's what it was, but so far they haven't said anything on game betting, like websites you can bet on with actual money.
Okay,
which is
so
weird.
All that
you can bet with actual money.
Oh yeah, well, it's like you can Habs versus Leafs.
Exactly,
you can bet on it.
That they haven't said anything in regards to that, but skin you can't.
Lotto Quebec has a section now for esports betting on their official site. So like, now I'm saying, like, where you're getting companies like this that are actual reputable companies getting involved, is Valve okay with that? Or
I want to say that Lotto Quebec is a big company, they seem to know what they're doing. I would be very surprised if they did not contact Valve prior.
I don't know if Valve can stop that. Do you know what I mean? Well, there's always going to be underground, sneaky, sneaky stuff.
No, for sure. But like big official companies like Loto Quebec, like why would I would think that they would, you know, just get in touch with Valve saying, hey, we're putting an esport. I'm sure they did the same with Blizzard. We're putting an esports section. People are going to be able to bet money on it. Here we are. We're a government ran organization. We're not some Joe Blow in his basement. And because that would be very stupid for them to start this without having the acknowledgement of the company, saying that they're a government ruled entity.
Let's face it, the only way to get any betting, lottery, or contesting done here is
to go through them.
You have to go through Loto Quebec.
Exactly. So.
And deal with the Régie.
But I mean, La Régie des Loteries is Loto Quebec.
Yeah. No, so this is definitely, I mean, it's still murky, still not sure exactly what Valve are going to do with this. They clearly said that they're against skin betting, but game betting, I think it's still out there, and I think it would probably be smart of them to actually like do something themselves in regards to that. Well, not necessarily money, but you know, who knows? Who knows what's going
to
happen?
All right, before we jump into our break and get on to the main topic of the show, I want you to give us a little bit of details on this CSGO iconic roster changes between Fnatic and Godsent.
I wanted to bring it up because it's actually good news for us.
Woo!
As we all know, in a couple of weeks, it's going to be Northern Arena at Fan Expo.
Oh, right.
Yes, and that's kind of the reason I wanted to bring up this little news article because, one of the longest running and longest I want to say the most the winningness
the winningest
the winningest
the most championist
yes the most championist team in CSGO for the last
I just made that up, just saying.
It's perfect, it's the word I wanted to go for. For the last couple, well, last year I want to say, maybe a bit more, is Fnatic. It's a Swedish roster, and they've been having, you know, trouble for the last couple of weeks, and there was last couple of months actually, and there was another Swedish team made up almost completely of the extra people who've been kicked out of Fnatic. They're like, we're going to make our own team with like other talented young players, and they're still called Godsent, and they just swapped players pretty much. So for those who follow the scene a little bit, three big names that were in Fnatic is JW, Flusha, and Crims. They're, you know, extremely popular players, and they're now in Godsent. And Godsent are going to be at Northern Arena.
Ooh.
So this is actually going to be, because Godsent, they played well, and they were an interesting team to look at, and they had potential, but that move that they just did, I was looking at the teams at Northern Arena, and there's a very good chance that they could win all of
it. Is Fnatic there?
No.
Okay.
That's the thing.
That's what I want to see, though, is when they have those changes in teams, because that's always what's awkward in like NHL and stuff, when you have like a player that goes in another team and then comes back into that barn to play a hockey game.
No, but Godsent will now be a mainstay of, with those three players. I feel that in the immediate future, Godsent are going to see the biggest rise and Fnatic are going to drop. But I think that maybe in a couple of months, I feel that Fnatic are going to come back, because one of the players they picked up is Lecro, and he is probably the youngest talented Swedish player ever of the history of CSGO. He's incredibly talented. I think he's like 17 or something. He's incredibly young, but the way that he was playing with Godsent was absolutely incredible. He's been consistent and very good in doing it. So it's going to be excited to see Godsent at Northern Arena, to be able to see the whole team there and see what's going to happen Fnatic. So that's kind of why I wanted to bring it up.
All right. We're going to have to wait for a few weeks.
I think the wait's going to be worth it.
Cool. All right. We're going to take a short break, but then we're going to come back and talk about the hype. Hello and welcome back to the GOG cast. We're on to our topic of the day. I'm here with Simon, Kat, and Allie. Yeah, you're still here. You didn't leave yet.
No, not yet.
I didn't chase you out.
Not yet.
All right, let's get into this. Hype is part of our everyday lives. Mm-hmm. And in the video game business, it's crucial. Games can live and die by the hype they receive. Hype can come in good forms, and hype can be bad. Without hype, some games will never see the light of day, while others will receive way too much to the point where there's no possible way for the game to live out its expectations. Yep. We here at Girls on Games are obviously part of the hype machine, and that's okay. But now I want to have a conversation with all you folks that you're sitting around my table, and Allie virtually sitting around my table. I want to discuss hype, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So let's get this jazz started. I want to start on the high note. So can anybody give me an example of hype used in a good way?
Well, I think to... if a lot of game... Hold on. I'm trying to find the proper words for this.
We have nothing in the doc.
No,
Simon.
But...
Simon's like treading water right now, like, yes.
I'm not looking at the dock. I'm doing this on top of my head. No, but what I was saying is that I think that hype is important, and I think that it's good to maybe bring it up for smaller game studios, and not necessarily like big hype like Reddit hype, which is an unstoppable train of madness, but like actual social media hype and game, like game reviewing site hype, because a lot of game reviewing site are going to look at a game and be like, this actually looks really interesting and this looks really fun. And I know that I'm kind of preaching to the choir here, but a game like Mages of Mistralia, which has been getting a lot of very cool reviews and very cool feedback from a lot of the game devs and other game devs and game reviewers, I think that there's a little bit of hype going on there, and I think that that little amount of hype is very important, very cool to kind of get the game started off and kind of to distinguish it itself from all the other indie titles that are out there.
Catherine?
Thinking Grand Theft Auto 5, even though I haven't played that game because it's not my kind of game. I feel like there was a lot of hype surrounding that game, but there was nothing negative. Once it came out, people were like, yeah, that's what we wanted, that's what we freaking wanted, like they also hyped it in a way. They presented the characters, they presented, of course, the underbelly, the underground, the violence, the crime, because it's Grand Theft Auto. They were just like, this is going to be the best Grand Theft Auto ever. They've never hyped it beyond past what Grand Theft Auto offers. They weren't going to be like, this is going to be the game of the year, this is going to be a trailblazer, we're changing the game, we're like new technology, whatever. They're just like, hey,
this is what you guys want.
Yeah, here. This is like going to be the best Grand Theft Auto. I think that's very important compared to other games where they're just like, we're bringing new, it's going to change the way you play games. No, it's not. I'm going to sit on my ass and expect to be entertained.
Yeah. Okay, so what you're saying here now is, for an indie dev on Simon's front, he's saying good hype is the media information that's getting delivered out.
Yeah.
Kat's got the side of delivering the expectations and not going above and beyond that, like not overpromising. Allie? Examples of good hype.
Stardew Valley comes to mind.
Yes, I can see that.
For me, like, obviously that game was, it was post-launch hype that really brought it, like, led to the success of the title. But, I mean, I think Stardew Valley was kind of, like, the ideal indie launch. Like, I mean, the guy, is it Confused Ape? Yeah. Is his Twitter? Yeah, Confused Ape, the developer, he developed a good game to start with. He didn't do anything mind-blowing. He marketed it as it was. He launched the game, and then he was praised for it. And it was word of mouth, and it was good reviews, and it was just that hype train for like about a week after the game launched, where every site that you went on had at least 4 posts about Stardew Valley. Like, that's an example of a game earning the hype.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's very important.
I want to take Fallout 4 into this and say this is a case where you're using the hype machine correctly, because obviously people have been talking about Fallout and wanting a new Fallout and all that jazz, but they announced it with just the right amount of time. What was it, 6 months before the game actually launched, in order to build up enough momentum talking, and not for people to get too speculative. And then the game came out, right? And so it did as well as it did, but there wasn't enough time for people to go and imagine all these grandiose ideas and then, you know, get their dreams crushed. Allie, you wanted to say something?
You kind of summed up what I was about to say when you said, well, it did as well as it did, which I mean, like, the community, like, Fallout fans are very torn on Fallout 4.
Yes.
And I actually don't think for once it has anything to do with any pre-launch hype.
Right. No.
Yeah.
I think that's just personal. Because I mean, as far as Bethesda, like as far as Bethesda was concerned, they gave us just enough information to know that Fallout 4 was coming, what the setting was, and a few of the new features. But they didn't announce anything grandiose and get our hopes up. It was just Fallout 4.
Yeah. There wasn't enough time for folks like us to spew theories and ideas and, you know, rumors to start. Because they would just give us little bits as it went, and then the game came out, and it was what it was.
And there was no major leaks also to just for us to build upon.
Leaks, quote unquote.
Yeah, leaks. I mean, the fact that they announced their very first ever press conference at E3 for Bethesda, I mean, we kind of had a feeling something was coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, we were like...
We assumed, and, you know, just speculating on a launch of a title, well, that's not... That's hype, but it's not as detrimental of speculation on, you know, everything in the game.
No, and it was what we expected. If you book an E3 press conference, you're launching a AAA game. And, you know, if we look at the Bethesda cycle, we're like, well, it's time for Fallout.
Well, yeah, and I think that's why Bethesda is kind of a flawed example, because... You know that right now Bethesda is working on Elder Scrolls 6. Like, you know that they are, and they haven't... Not 5, sorry. Like, you know that they're working on it. Of course they are.
Skyrim was 5.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah, Oblivion was 4. Sorry. Yeah, so, like, you know that they're working on it. So it's... People are already hyped about it because they have pretty much 2 games.
But because they haven't said anything, no one's like...
But you
like,
know that they're working on it.
It's
you
not
know
a hot topic of conversation. Right.
Yeah. But it's not something like, I'll take the example of Overwatch. That's all I'm playing. Like Blizzard was saying that they're working on Project Titan since 2009, pretty much. And they didn't talk about it because, like, we don't know even if it's going to come with something. But then the moment that they announced Overwatch, it was like, holy crap. Like, everything, people were freaking out because it looked really good. And I was freaking out because I thought that looked really good and I was really excited about it. And yeah, of course, that builds the hype and that, but they didn't really like companies like Blizzard and Bethesda and Valve. They almost don't need to market their games because the community markets the game itself. Like, they kind of just have to announce it and then people are gonna shoot their pants.
But that's it. That's the hype machine.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's kind of interesting that you mentioned Project Titan, because didn't Titan get canceled?
It got canceled, but a lot of the elements from Titan are in Overwatch. Like Tracer was a character that was developed for Titan.
And so this is something that I'm going to get into a little bit later on in the discussion, but choosing what you say,
yes,
is very important. Mm-hmm. And so for that example, Blizzard not spilling the beans or making grandiose claims about Titan, just saying, hey, we're working on something, we're calling it Project Titan, helped them further along the line.
Yeah.
When they had to announce the cancellation and that, you know, assets or whatnot were being used for Overwatch.
All right, let's talk about the bad hype. So, Simon, you recently reviewed No Man's Sky. That's getting some really interesting reviews online, but you overall thought, nah.
I thought that, like I said in my review, it's a very nice concept. Conceptually, it's very interesting, and like how they're bringing the world and how it's, you know, generated and all that kind of stuff. I think it's very interesting, and but it doesn't feel sandboxy enough for it to be a sandbox, and it's not story driven enough for it to be in an actual story driven game. So. But the way that the game was sold to us, and then again, I think it's the internet taking things way out of the proportion and think that it's going to be the next big thing and that it's going to be amazing and it's going to be, you know, incredible and that kind of stuff. That, I think that from the beginning ruined the game, because whatever game came out, whatever like the developers made, the expectation for this game were so incredibly high because of the hype that whatever came out, it was going to be either a massive failure or an okay success. Like, they were pretty much setting themselves up to fail at this point, unfortunately.
Kat, remember E3 2013?
Yes, we were there when they revealed the first trailer, and they didn't say much about the game. They just showed images, and even from there, you and I were sold. We're like, oh my god, want to play this? What is this? Got to find out about this.
Mind you, that space was super infectious, so matter what they fed us, it was like we had drank the happy juice potion, and we were like, consoles.
Exactly. They had actually, to give you some context, they actually had invited us for dinner. They had food trucks outside, and we drank wine and ate food in the blazing alien sun before going in.
So they offered me double wines. Who ordered doubles wine? And I'm going to take it. I'm a newbie.
She came back with buckets of wine. Anyway, so we were, say like 80% of my hype for No Man's Sky was me being tipsy, sitting in that room being like, I want to play that.
I think a lot of No Man's Sky's problem too was the price point. And a lot of the comments that we're getting about the review is that if the game was $5-$10, like Minecraft was, for example, when it first released, then for $5-$10, sick. Yeah, the game has its problem, but you know that they're going to continue working on it and that they're going to develop it and they're going to make it interesting and better. But for $70, and like I said in my review, $70 beaver, you expect a full game. You expect the full gaming experience to have, you know, something from beginning to end. And yes, you expect bugs and stuff to not necessarily work out the day of, but it that's the best example of a company that 100% worked on hype to release their game. And they bit off way more than they can chew, and they had great ideas and great concept, but they were, by all this hype, they were pretty much setting themselves up to fail because there was so much hype that there was no way they could live up to it, whatever they did.
I think some of it is hype words, like the vocabulary that's being used lately.
Procedurally generated
is one of them. Yes. Allie, you got any of those words that seem to be spun all the time? The buzzwords?
I mean,
innovative. Yeah.
Groundbreaking.
Oh my god. Yeah, it's all part of the hype machine and the vocabulary used in posts.
And I mean, like, No Man's Sky is not a horrible game. Like, I was rereading my review, and I realized that I was very harsh to it. Well, not harsh, but I was fair. Like, the criticisms that I gave to the game are still there no matter what. And concept-wise, it's very interesting. Like, the landing to planet and off-planet is seamless. And that's impressive. Like, technically, I say it in my article, technically and from a technical perspective, the game is impressive. Like, yes, there's some visual bugs, that kind of stuff. But the fact that all of this is procedurally generated, that is impressive, and that's a very awesome way to make your game, but it needs to be fleshed out a whole lot more than what it is right now for it to be an actual game.
Well, that reminds me a lot of what Shannon, she put a comment on Facebook on your article.
Yeah.
Shannon, our staff writer, she says, I'm always suspicious when people only talk about how the game is procedurally generated.
Yeah.
If that's the coolest and most interesting feature of your game, betrays laziness.
Yeah, it's true.
For sure.
You have to do nothing. You make a math algorithm and let her roll.
Yeah.
Because it's all math.
And Jean-Sébastien Héroux said, there is no game really. It's a universe generator, which is true.
I haven't played it myself because I'm not willing to spend 70 beaver dollars on this game.
Don't. Save your beaver dollars.
I have watched a lot of Let's Plays and I've watched a lot of streams. And No Man's Sky looks like a great skeleton of a game.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But it's waiting for a skin. And that's really unfortunate.
It's like a tech demo.
$70 is unfortunate.
It's a tech demo.
$5-$10, fine. That's cool.
All right, quick. Any other games that have, you know, fade bad hype? All of them?
All AAA games.
All of them?
No, but it's true.
The Division.
Yeah, the Division.
Oh, Division, yeah, is suffered. Something that comes to mind.
Ubisoft is good at making hype against themselves, which is kind of unfortunate. I think they finally realized after Watch Dogs and Division was the last straw, that and forced them to stop and put a hold on Assassin's Creed, that the hype was working against them.
Like, I'm a big fan of what Bethesda did for Fallout 4, which is basically don't talk about the game. People know you're working on it. Like, we know Ubisoft is working on Assassin's Creed. We know they are. They don't even need to tell us that they are. But announce the game when it's, I don't know, 6 months to release. It's perfect. Like my wet dream is that Valve releases Half-Life 3 the day they announce it. Like, that's my wet dream. Like, that's... As of right now, no game company has done this. Like, no AAA game company has done that.
They've never pulled a Beyonce.
And I feel that when they do, they're gonna sell so much copies of that game that, like, people are gonna be like, wow, that is hype. And that's a bit what Ali was saying earlier, like, post game release hype
that you which earn
is, yeah, exactly, which is almost as important, well, more important, because if the game is out and it's fun and people are liking it and there's, you know, I was gonna say mouth to mouth, but that's not
word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mouth to mouth is like if someone's can't breathe.
I know what it is. I'm like, that's not the word. But no, and if it happens after a game is released and that people are loving the game, then that is amazing. So make sure that your game is fantastic before you actually release it, then just release it. Don't even talk about it. Because we all know that the big AAA titles are being worked on, like it or not.
How can game devs approach hype so that it works in their benefit? Allie?
This is the topic I said I was going to bring up a little bit later in our discussion.
There you go.
Representatives of developers and developers themselves need to think before they speak.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. Is that everyone needs to take a second. And I know, you know, when you're at events like E3 or PAX, or if you're doing a live stream, you get caught up in the moment and you want to make you and your project look the best as possible and make it eye-catching and make it stand out. Because, I mean, the industry's like, we're saturated right now with games. Mm. So you want to stand out.
Yeah.
But think before you say something, because if you don't, you end up in the same situation as No Man's Sky right now, where there is literally a pages long list on Reddit that compiles everything that you've said was going to be in the game and that isn't in the game.
Yeah.
These promises that developers are making.
Yeah.
The internet remembers.
Oh, yeah.
The internet does not forget.
Nope.
Better than an elephant.
Especially not Reddit. Reddit does not forget anything.
Does not forget, does not forgive, and has no chill.
It's impressive.
Yeah, we can add a link in the post for the podcast so you can go check it out yourself. But they have direct quotes from the developer. They have, you know, videos of him saying things. You need to be careful.
Yeah,
be honest. Transparency goes a long way when you're discussing game development, and give some credit to your community that they're smarter than you, than you being able to pull the wool over their eyes and get away with it.
Like, it's, and I think that, like, what can game developers do? Go on Reddit.
Yeah.
It's as dumb as this, because, like, I look at what any community on Reddit, there's going to be some really dumb posts, for sure. The majority of stuff is going to be dumb posts. But every once in a while, there's going to be something that you'd be like, holy crap, like, that's actually really interesting and would make the game that I'm playing, that I want to play, even better. So don't be ashamed of going on Reddit and listen to what the community's saying and build on this. Because I feel that if you're making a game and you're really close with the community you're making the game for, the game is going to come out and it's going to be a success 100% with our community. So why not do it?
That's a fine line. I definitely agree that taking your community's concerns and suggestions into consideration is very important. I know that firsthand. But that's also a fine line, because fans can be pretty entitled.
For sure.
And so you have to kind of take it, you know, take it as it comes and make decisions that are good decisions in the long run. Don't cave to everybody, but
no, for sure.
But being aware is definitely something that is important.
Sorry, quick example before anything else. There's a user on Reddit called Slot Squadron, and he makes it's for Counter-Strike Go, and he makes mods that are, they're weapon mods, weapon balance mods. And this guy is like, has a PhD in mathematics. He's extremely smart and brilliant. And whenever like he comes up with a new update and mods, that kind of stuff, to his mod, to weapon balance and thing, everything he does, he explains why he does it, and he gives out detailed description. And you look at this guy, you're like, why isn't Valve like getting in touch with a guy like this? And there's so many map makers also that make brilliant maps for Counter-Strike. Why isn't Valve getting in touch with those people? Same thing with Overwatch. Like, I'm on the Overwatch subreddit, and there's people who have incredibly smart ideas, and it's always the same people that come up with those ideas. Like, get in touch with those people, get in touch with the community, and talk with them. Because talking with the community is gonna be what makes your game go in the long run, 100%.
I know Blizzard's actually pretty good at that. I know some people that have been, you know, really intense community members have been hired professionally. So it's good to know that they are listening and they are looking and watching, and that's pretty great.
In a world where clickbait is driving web traffic and hits and viewership is important, how can we as media help keep the hype in check so that it doesn't turn evil? Kat, I'm throwing this to you.
Oh, simple. Check your emotions and check them at the door, which is something that's hard. Like, if you look back at the podcast we had on Mages of Mistralia, where my friend Patrick was showing us the game he's making, you can see in my face that I'm just like, ah, this is the best thing I've ever done. I didn't even try the game yet. I got to try their demo, and I'm getting more and more convinced. But at the same time, I know Patrick personally, and I know the kind of game he likes and the kind of game he's making, and we play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons together, so I'm seeing a lot of like that in there. So I'm way too emotionally invested. So whenever you ask me about Mages of Mistralia, my hype is going to be at 5 levels above what it should be for media. So I think for us, we're going to have to like check our emotions and maybe just, I like to make lists of shit that's bothering me, stuff that's doing great and things like that. And from there, and then rereading myself, sometimes I'm just like, I went over the moon for something that's not that great. And then after that, once you put it out there, mm-hmm. clickbait or not, like, we're held accountable for what we wrote. Yeah. So check your emotions. Check to make sure that what you're saying is in line with what the game is and what you want to say about the game and what you want the community to remember you said about the game. And honestly, just, and as for clickbait, don't do it. Don't do clickbaity title. Just fucking don't. We like to make witty titles.
Yes, witty title works.
Funny.
Don't feed into speculation. And check your sources.
Oh, yeah.
That's really what it comes down to, is rumors run rampant on the internet. So double and triple check everything that you post. Not, like, I don't mean you specifically. I just mean
in general.
Media. In general.
Fine,
it's
I'll do it,
Allie.
God,
practice. It's a very good practice that I think is kind of, like, everyone's so quick to, like, want to be the first person to post something.
Yeah.
That they kind of forget sometimes. And there's so many articles now that I go back and like see that stuff has been redacted or corrected. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, it's okay, but at that point the damage is done. So as media, we have that responsibility to make sure that we're making informed announcements.
All right. And lastly, how can the consumer use hype to their advantage?
Whew, jeez.
Take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, do like Ali's. Well, it's almost like for the game reviewers, do your research. Don't buy into the hype. Just don't.
Yeah.
Don't let the
like the grand image of things. Don't let the Facebook post dictate your decision.
Definitely.
Like click through to the article. Read the article. Like, that's exactly what it is do your research. Simon's 100% right. It is, don't read the one, like, attention-grabbing line and expect it to be informative.
And not only that, but don't only look at big game reviewing websites. Like
big outlets?
Yeah, like GameSpot or whatever, because I mean, like it or not, those guys are often quote unquote sponsored by big companies. So look for the smaller guys, you know, games like, I want to say Giant Bomb, which is now GameSpot, but Giant Bomb is still very good. But like Rock Paper Shotgun, us to some extent, you know, smaller venues that are probably going to be a whole lot more honest about what they feel with the game and what they think about the game than big names like IGN and GameSpot and that kind of stuff. So like, be on the lookout for those kind of reviews and people from those people, people you trust.
And I will always say this, but nobody should be telling you how you feel.
Yeah.
Or what you like,
mm-hmm.
or what you should be playing, or how you should be playing. Games are entertainment. So even if you read Simon's review of No Man's Sky and you're like, you know, GFY, all I wanted was a procedurally generated universe for me to fly around and dick around. This is what I wanted. Good on you.
Power to you, yeah.
Yeah, power to you. Play that game. Enjoy it. Like, in the end, that's what it is.
And for the PC gamers out there, Steam has this nice little feature that is, if you played a game for less than 2 hours and you've owned it for less than, I think it's a month, you can get a full refund, no questions asked.
That's a nice feature.
So if you play a game for an hour and a half, don't like it, return it, and you're done. Bing, bang. You can get, you know, so that's that is incredibly smart if you want to try the game.
That's a cool feature.
So don't pre-order, wait for it to come out, buy it. If you don't like it, return it.
And it's okay to buy a game discounted. You're not cheating out the publishers and the developers. You're actually prolonging the game cycle.
Yeah, because when it's on big discount, it's probably a year or 2 years after it's out. So that's like, go ahead, do it for sure. I haven't bought Fallout 4 yet. I'm waiting for the collector's edition box at like $10 on Steam in 2 years. That's what I did with Fallout 4 and Skyrim. I just waited for it to come out with collector's edition or whatever.
Fallout 3.
Yeah. Yeah. 3.
The year edition.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up the podcast for us here today. Thank y'all for coming to hang out.
Thanks for inviting
me. I really enjoyed talking like this.
Fantastic.
Like with real people.
I love it.
In the same space.
Mm-hmm.
You folks on the computer, the internet, the world, that kind of stuff, let us know what you think. You can track us down, of course, on all our social media at The Girls on Games on Twitter and Facebook, Girls on Games on Instagram and Snapchat, and of course on our website at girlsongames.ca. But I want you folks to know how to talk to these lovely people who are around the table with me. Simon, shout out your Twitter handle.
It's GOG Simon M, because GOG Simon is taken by some random person who hasn't posted since 2013, so
we'll work on that.
Kind of mad.
It's probably you forgot.
No.
You can track me. I am CSDSBIENS, CSDBIEN, on everything.com, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. No, don't come to my Facebook. It's personal. Just go to Twitter and Instagram.
Allie, how can everybody get a hold of you?
I am 8-Bit Blonde everywhere on the internet for the most part. So it's 8-Bit Blonde spelt out. And so they have Twitter, Instagram, Facebooks, Gamertag. That's me.
And hey, you know what?
What?
girlsongames.ca/about.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, all of our stuff is there.
All our cute faces are there. Yeah. You can click on it. Except
all faces. Mine. Yeah, and if you want to talk to me, Leah, I'm Leah Jewer on Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff. Facebook's kind of, yeah, it's private, but you never know. I might friend you. Just try. All right. I also want to thank.
Cute enough where I have a picture of a dog in your picture.
Just want to thank, of course, our sponsor, Fun.io, who gives us wonderful hosting. So if you're looking for a web host, go check them out. Thank you to everybody here on the panel. Thank you to everybody who's listening. Really appreciate it. And have fun playing games, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Ciao.
Have a good one.